You're listening to Get Out and Drive Podcast with John Custom Car Nerd Meyer and Sean Mr. Sedan Man Cheryl. We'll be bringing you gearheads all the information you've never wanted to know about cars and why they should be on the road and not in your garage. Are you ready to get out and drive?
Well, we are back with another episode of Get Out and Drive. I am Sean, Mr. Sedan Man Cheryl.
I am John, Custom Car Nerd Meyer.
So today, on the way over, I drove Saddle Tramp over to the studio, and I'm pulling in, and 8-point buck.
Holy cow.
Standing next to the driveway.
Wow.
So I'm pulling in, and deer doesn't run off. Makes me think, huh, Saddle Tramp is a lot quieter than he used to be.
Oh, it is, man. We used to scare all sorts of animals.
Yeah, puppies and nuns used to run.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, this deer just stood there.
There's a little guy right there.
Yeah. So I get my phone out, taking pictures, and he's just staring at the truck.
Right.
I know what he's thinking.
What's he thinking?
Thinking, man, that's a cool truck.
Oh.
I'd like to go right for a ride in that thing.
I bet he would.
Yeah, so I don't know. Opened the door. He kind of went over to the to the woods a little bit.
Right.
Still staring at the truck.
Well.
So, I don't know.
It is cool.
We have to see if we can get him to go for a ride one of these days.
Yeah, next time maybe. It is pretty cool.
Anyhow. So, I've got another Get Out and Drive listeners ask.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is from Dave Shutton.
Mm-hmm.
We interviewed Dave for our episode, Driven to California.
Oh, I remember. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a fun.
He built a lot of stuff.
He built a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah.
So, his question for us. If you could build anything, what would it be?
Wow. No holds barred.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a tough question to answer.
It's pretty broad.
I mean, that changes hour to hour, minute by minute sometimes.
It depends on what's for sale and what things you send me on Marketplace that are available.
What pops in my head at any given second. I mean, there's always 50 builds going on in my head. But I think if I had to pick one vehicle that I would like to build, I'd have to go with a 55 Chevy.
Okay.
Again, it would be kind of dependent on the day, time, hour, how I would build it.
Right.
But I think it, you know, it would be it'd definitely be something that I could get out and drive in.
Right.
Probably LS powered.
Okay.
Then just low, sleek, clean, simple. Some with Steelies and dogs.
Right. And, simple, effective.
Simple, effective.
Right.
And I think that's, at this moment, today, that's what I'd be building.
Nice. Today, what tickles my fancy, I know I'm always talking about 40s era hot rods. I think today I would like a 63 Plymouth altered wheelbase.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
All right. That's kind of different for you.
It is. I told you it changes from day to day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You're usually more of the custom guy.
Right.
And stuff. All right.
Yep.
I like where you're going with this. Keep going.
Oh yeah. Got to be something altered wheelbase. Got to be something crazy. I like that era. It is the weird looking car, AFX car, just before funny cars. It's an incredible era. I never had a chance to build one of those yet.
Uh-huh.
Never had a chance to be involved with one of those yet, either a clone or a restoration or a new car.
Okay.
I really think that would be a handful to drive.
Okay. Well,
yeah. Fair enough.
I'll hop on Marketplace and see if I can help you out with that.
Oh, come on now. You're killing me.
What do you got?
I've got a question from Donnie Farabee. He was one of our guests on an episode called Driven to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was here in studio with us.
Yep, he is from Memphis, Tennessee, down near Elvis area.
Right.
He's always wrapped up in Elvis-type stuff. He was the one that helped restore Elvis's sprint car.
Right, yeah.
That is a cool story.
Yeah.
That is a really cool
story. Donnie's got a lot of cool stories.
Yep. He asks us, if you could go to a shop or builder, just hang out, help, shoot the breeze, which shop would it be and why? My specific interests have always been with 40s era cars, customs, like we just talked about. So I think it'd be great to talk with a person that I kind of moved up with and generally the same age and have the same ideas with is Tim Strange.
Oh, yeah.
From Strange Motion.
Right.
We will even be interviewing him later on in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we'll hear a lot from him, a lot of history on Pro Street and history of himself and Strange Motion and his wife, Carrie, doing interior work for them and how they built themselves up through the years.
Right.
I think it's going to be a great interview, and I think it'd be somebody that would be great just kind of hang out with, hang in the shop, and not only do a podcast about Tim.
Right.
But just kind of hang out for a bit. He seems like a cool guy.
Yeah. Oh, good answer. Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, John, tell our legions of fans about Drive Gear.
Drive Gear, that is our new apparel line for Get Out and Drive. Available at getdrivegear.com. They've got tons of stuff there.
Yeah.
Shirts, hoodies, all sorts of things. I think they even have masks.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, several different designs.
Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff available. So if you get a chance, listening to Get Out and Drive, you want to let everybody else know that you do, get your apparel at getdrivegear.com. Hey, Sean, I heard there's a new holiday.
Really? Do I get the day off?
You may. It is October 4th, 2020. I think it's going to be a Sunday.
Oh, I will have the day off then.
You'll definitely have the day off. We reached out to the founder of National Get Out and Drive Day to find out what it's all about. National Get Out and Drive Day encourages everyone to hit the road, enjoy your co-pilots, and see the sights. Through Get Out and Drive podcast, that's us.
That is us.
We're able to connect with people through cars. Everyone has a story or memories of driving with your family and wishing you weren't squished in the back seat with your brother and sister. Taking your first solo drive after getting your license, driving around with your friends with the music blasting. Many people remember that old car that someone in your family or that guy up the street had. Cars and driving are part of the road trip of our lives. We need to keep that tradition in our lives and in the lives of generations to come. We want everyone to take a day to get out and drive and to capture the allure and adventure of the open road.
I am looking forward to it.
I am certainly looking forward to speaking to everybody who has a chance to celebrate Get Out and Drive Day on October 4th, 2020.
How can everyone find out about National Get Out and Drive Day?
National Get Out and Drive Day can be found on Facebook and Instagram at National Get Out and Drive Day. Can be found on Twitter, Get Out and Drive Day. Or you can actually fill out a form and tell them about your event or what you plan on doing for National Get Out and Drive Day at nationalgetoutanddriveday.com.
All right. Today we are interviewing with Tim Strange. Tim is a veteran custom car builder, TV personality, owner of Strange Motion Rod and Custom, an event announcer and host. How you doing today, Tim?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good.
Thanks for spending a little time with us today. I heard you just got back from the NSRA Street Rod Nationals.
Yeah, we went up Wednesday, came home a little bit early yesterday. I get to go up there and do some filming with them. They hire me to do some stuff for their Facebook page. And every year, NSRA puts together a DVD coverage of the event, and they sell that. So I've been doing that with them for 7 or 8 years now.
Okay.
Cool. So how was the show this year?
Lucky to be there, I think, the way the world is right now with all the cancellations for events. A lot of vendors were not there, and a lot of vendors pulled out at the last minute because there was all kinds of rumors going around about safety standards and what they were going to be able to do in the building. And some vendors decided to be outside, which worked good. If you've ever been to Louisville for the Street Rod Nationals, that building is humongous. And about a third of it was just partitioned off with a wall that you couldn't even know there was anything on the other side. It was still a temporary hospital. Even though I guess nobody's ever checked in there, they still have it open just in case. It still gives you an idea. We had some friends that came, some customers that never been there since they moved from California, and they still couldn't believe how big that building was.
Wow.
Cool. So what was the car count like?
A little over 7,600 was the car registration. I would say there was maybe 6,000 cars on the ground. Yeah, it was still good.
Wow.
The most important thing that I seen all weekend was how happy everybody was and the smiles, and everybody was just happy to be out and about, seeing hot rods driving around. The burnouts were crazy at night. It's probably crazier than I've ever seen it. And I thought it was an absolutely excellent event. Sure, it wasn't as big as last year, but it was the 50th anniversary last year with 12,000 cars.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, everybody and their brother went last year.
But we had an absolutely amazing time.
Well, cool. If you would, tell us what sparked your interest in the automotive world.
Well, I'm one of them weird people that probably like you guys are, that pretty much everybody in my family and everybody that I grew up around was either into stock cars, drag racing, hot rods, motorcycles, something. So my dad was into the motorcycles and built choppers till I was about 6 or 7. And then when me and my sister was too good or too big to get all the Harley with him, so he decided to get a 57 Chevy, and he's been a Tri-5 Chevy guy ever since. We went to local rod runs and shows growing up all the time. And then my great uncle, which I just call Unc, he would take me to the big street rod runs, the custom camp shows, and he really got my interest in hot rod, street rods, and lead sleds, definitely.
That's cool. So I know you said your dad had a 57 Chevy. What was your first car, man?
My first car was a 55 Chevy. And this is a story you just can't make up. I was a farm kid, even though it's kind of hard to figure that out with all my earrings and tattoos. I was a 4-H kid. We had all kinds of animals. I had to work quite a while, feed the animals before I even get on the school bus at 7:30 every morning, even from about 8 years old on. I sold my 4-H show pigs when I was 8 years old and bought my 55 Chevy 150 baby blue and white for my great-great-grandpa for $100.
Wow.
Nice.
So we drove it around the barnyard. We pulled a loading chute. If any of you city people probably have no idea what a loading chute is, how you would load the animals in the back of a big truck. Then when I was getting a little bit older, I realized it was a little too rusty for me to build for my first car, so I sold it. Bought a 64 Le Mans, sold it. Then by the time I was 14, I bought my 64 Chevelle. That was my high school summer car. And then I rebuilt it. And it was my first car that I started winning national awards with when I was 19.
Man, that is not a story you can make up.
No. Very unique.
And by the time I was 19, at one current time, not buy and sell, I've lost track on that. Right. I have owned 11 vehicles by the time I was 19. And Adam, $50 parts cars are sitting out in the cattle pasture, but I had 11 cars when I was 19.
Wow. That's a lot of cars.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot of cars for anybody, particularly a
19-year-old. That is true. That is true.
Yeah, I had more cars then than I do now.
Man alive. And that's all, that is a pre-eBay and pre-everything, when you could pick up a car for a couple hundred dollars and take what you want off it and pitch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys are Missouri boys. I live in Tennessee now, and the Southern people don't understand that you'd buy a $50 car that absolutely had no floor pans in it.
Right.
Just, got a good bumper on it, and you just buy the whole car and stick the rest out in the pasture.
But yeah. Yep.
The Southern people have no idea what rust is.
That is exactly right. And I bought several cars just for one or two parts and moving on.
Yeah. the joys of living in the Rust Belt, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how did you learn how to work on cars? Did you get tech training, college, hands-on? How did you start out?
Working in the shop with my dad. He was a farmer, and then nights and weekends, we were always working on his Tri-5 Chevys. Then we painted all the local farmer trucks, put rockers, cap corners on a million square-body Chevy trucks for extra money. But one of my dad's 55 Chevys that he built had a tilt front end on it, and he let me use the spray gun. He handed it, gave it to me. I sprayed the yellow firewall when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I got excited and just held the gun and didn't move and ran the hell out of it. And it had a tilt front end, and he left it on there, and he'd point everybody. That's where my boy learned how to paint. They'd look at that run and it's like, I don't know if that's actually learning or not. He might have squeezed the trigger. I learned to paint and do body work from a young age.
Yeah.
And then I started working at the local body shop right down from the high school when I got my driver's license. That we did, small town collision, but we was also known for Corvettes, Concours style vet stuff. From the fiberglass, he was a tournament boat fisherman, so we fixed bass boats. And when I was in high school, I could blend candies and the boat flake and everything. And then I went to auto body school in Scott Community College in Bettendorf, Iowa for a 2-year program. Worked at a couple of Chevy dealerships real quick while I was building my first full-on hot rod, a 54 Chevy that I chopped the hard top, built a tube chassis. I couldn't afford a cross member kit, so I built all the suspension, threaded all the arms.
Wow.
Did all that. Pro street car, got it done about 93 or 94. Street Machine National stuff and got in magazines 26 years ago, and I've been running my shop ever since the phone started ringing when that first car hit the magazines.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Inspiration. So your 17-19 year old, you're looking to build your first car, or you're looking to build it. Who'd you look to? People that had built other cars, other builders, things like that, other car builds that were already existing. What'd you see? What'd you like?
I'm one of them that memorized about every car magazine there ever was. Between car magazines and BMX magazines, you live in the middle of nowhere. You know, in the wintertime, you just kept going through those magazines. You know, I was a big fan of, you know, Barris stuff. And
sure,
of course, I love Stamps. Of course, Fat Jack Robinson, he's a hero. And I actually got my picture taken with Fat Jack at the Rutscher Show this year. So I'm still kind of a super fan. You know, of course, you know, the Boyd Coddington stuff.
And right, right.
The custom stuff. I was a big Gary Howard fan. And, you know, Gene Winfield and Daryl Starbird. I was just into anything that I could get my hands on. And of course, I liked muscle cars because I was a Chevelle kid too.
Right.
And I loved all the Baldwin Motion stuff. So that's kind of where I got the motion for my Strange Motion name, kind of an homage to those guys. And then it also means that I'll work on anything that moves. So
nice.
Very cool.
Anybody step up to be a mentor and actually come and physically help you? Or it was pretty much you were learning by school of hard knocks on your own?
It's like I grew up around a bunch of dudes, and you know, between Galesburg, Quad Cities, and Peoria up there in Illinois, there's a really good hot rod scene.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we'd go to a car show in Nauvoo, that there'd be 700 cars.
Wow.
You know, good turnout. It was like a tri-state event in Nauvoo, Illinois, and just a good group of dudes. So, you know, all these guys that my dad was friends with growing up that, well, I'm just coming home from someplace, and, oh, their garage door's open, and they're working on a 37 Ford. So I stop at different guys' house, from Mick Greemans to Al Adams, Bob Southwick, you know, a bunch of Midwest guys that, you know, have had some magazine love through the years and are still building stuff in their garage. They're great fabricators. Very lucky to have a really good, good hot rod scene growing up in that area.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anybody that you had kind of secret inspiration, somebody that you may want to say now that you looked at their things and you kind of looked up to them?
Well, I said, we lived in the middle of nowhere, so I think it was just my dad and his work ethic. You know, he's a farmer, and he taught me a 12-hour day of work is still only a half a day of work. Worked from sun up to sun down. He worked 70 hours a week at a factory, and we ran a Christmas tree farm. When I was going to school, I would work at the body shop, drive to Bettendorf, Iowa, which was an hour, go to school for 4 hours in the morning. School started at 7 a.m. I'd go up there, then I'd come back, work at the body shop till about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we had a seasonal Christmas tree business that we'd go out and cut all the trees. Pre-cuts. I was the head flocker, so you laugh at that, you know, the white flocking. I was the flocking guy, so there was nights I'd be out there flocking trees till 2 a.m., go take a nap, get up, drive the car, leave to go to school at 6 in the morning, and we just, that's what we did. The Christmas tree business is, we had that farm, they quit, they still got, dad still has that farm, they quit doing the Christmas trees probably, I don't remember, 94 or 5 or something like that, maybe.
Cool. Learning by, busting your ass and good work ethic, obviously.
Yeah. You know, farm kids, that's what it's, that's all you do is you just work. So, I mean, I work by myself in the shop now, and my short week is probably a 70 hour week.
Wow.
So you own Strange Motion. What point did you decide to open your own shop?
It was 26 years ago. My 54 Chevy Pro Street car to a bunch of Midwest rod runs, and it got in on the cover, a little small cover picture on Popular Hot Rodding. And a few months later, we had, like, when we was at the Street Machine Nationals that year, we probably had 6 photo shoots. That's I think that's might have been where I met John, was the Street Machine Nationals years ago. All these photographers would come around the world, and we got shot for Norway, Finland, Sweden, Japan, Germany. We get a handful of photo shoots, and the next year they'd just be sprinkled all over,
yeah,
all over the world, all the magazines.
Yeah.
And pretty lucky on that end.
Cool. Well, what was the, you remember the first vehicle that you built when you opened your shop?
The personal car that got the shop going was the 54 Chevy. I always had stuff when I worked at the body shops and the Chevy dealerships. I was always working on stuff for people. I think the first car that I was finishing when I opened my shop was a little weird ex-drag car Pro Street Anglia. I was just finishing painting. Didn't do the whole chassis or nothing on it. And then for about 3 years, I just worked out of the corner of my dad's tractor shed, drywalled a little corner, and did everything in one room. All the fab, the paint, the wiring, everything was just in a about 35 by 40 drywalled room in the corner. I did a couple, you know, some local guys' restorations, some Mopars and some Transams, a few Dodges. Of course, I can't count how many Tri-5 Chevys I worked on since my dad was always around them. So I did a lot of Tri-5 Chevys. I always was building a car for myself. You know, as a builder, you're always looking for what's next. You know, that's what they say. What's your favorite car you ever built? Well, it's the next one, because even when you're finishing what your dream car is, you've already come up with ideas that you don't want to put in that one because it's too late to go backwards and you save that for the next project. I think one of the first real customer cars that hit magazines was a 36 Ford truck that had a 33 car front end on it. The cab was stretched, lift off kind of Carson top, but real that type of era billet wheeled street rod. That kind of a weird story since we live close. Dave Lane, very well known street rod, hot rod builder. He still worked for his government job. He was working on this car, wasn't getting it done quick enough for the customer. So Dave Lane actually called me and says, "Hey man, you want to finish this thing?" And now I look back, Dave was wanting to go towards the traditional hot rod side of the world instead of the billet all machine stuff. But very talented, because I've worked on a car that he half built and I finished. And we took that to the Street Rod Nationals the year it was in Oklahoma City, I think in 97. Got a shop for Street Rodder and everything. So
very good.
Very cool. What are you currently working on, or you have anything in the works that you can talk about?
Over the years, if you always try and get good clients, and I can say I've probably got some of the best clients that I've ever had in 26 years. The weird thing is both of the guys are really private. Both collectors have over 100 cars in their personal collections.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they just keep a car here. All I can say is we're doing still doing a lot of 30s, 40s, 50s stuff. LS swaps, doing a lot of LS stuff to make it look like it's old with a fake distributor and old valve covers.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. And we also got a couple fill-in cars. We got a 62 Econoline in there for another guy. We've got a 442 Cutlass in there that's just about ready for paint. 5-speed in it, Tremec transmission, kind of a mild Pro Tour. Of course, I've always got something going for myself. Got a 65 Chevelle. For me and my dad, that's kind of old school 60s hot rods, real rodders, wheels, like a Hallibrand look, 15s and 16 by 10s, deep dish,
yeah,
mini tubs, Z frame, channeled, extended rockers, big block carburetor,
sweet,
hammered on the ground and coilovers and Pala interior. So it's like a real 60s hot rod, you know, big rumble and
right.
a little bit of modern tweak to it.
Yeah, good.
So, I'll be looking forward to seeing that one. I own a 65 Chevelle myself, so I always love those cars.
Oh, awesome. You know, my first car was a 64 that I kind of built and won some awards with, and then I sold it. A couple years ago, me and Dad tried finding that same car back, could not find that. Well, my good friend that actually helped me paint that 64 back in the day when we were like 18, 19 years old, he still had his 65, so he actually sold that car to us. So it's the next best thing than finding my old 64 is redoing his 65.
Oh, very nice.
Great, great. Well, we talk about breakdown stories here on Get Out and Drive. Sure, you've had your share. Anything you can talk about? Things that blew up on the side of the road and you had to pick up MacGyver style?
I've been kind of lucky on the hot rod side of stuff. Other than, you know, losing a fuel pump, I've lost fuel pumps along the way, and Power Tour, I lost a fuel pump. And when you're at Des Moines in my Pro Street 54, we lost a fuel pump. But then we kind of realized after we changed the fuel pump on Saturday afternoon at the hotel that I think it was just low on gas.
Wow.
Driving to college every day, we'd always go to the front, being around the snow, you don't drive your good cars in the wintertime. You go to the front line at the junkyard and buy running cars for less than $1,000. And I
sure.
had a, I don't remember what year it is, 70 something red Polara with the folding headlights. It was red with fender skirts and white vinyl interior. And I paid 800 bucks for that thing.
Nice.
North and, North. And one morning in the winter, it just started groaning and groaning and groaning and slowing down. Even though I gave it more gas, it just kind of went ka-kunk, and that was it. And
oh, my.
Over, we just called the same junkyard to come get it, put it a little farther back in the junkyard. So.
Yes. Oh, we always laugh because we keep a good screwdriver and good shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pull the license plates off and start walking.
And yeah, and a good blanket and some coveralls in the wintertime if you lived up north. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because I mean, my wife has got pictures of me on the side of the road. We took our, you remember our Red and Black Flame Colorado that was on the cover of Street Trucks and several other different magazines. But we had that truck and we melted an airline next to an exhaust. We pulled that thing off the side of the road. I always kept roadside stuff for air ride. Cut an inline union, put new airline on there, and I took off running. And my dad was with me. He said, "Where the hell are you going?" I said, "I'm going over here. I'm going to find a tin can, and I'm going to find a piece of rubber, and I've got some zip ties and some other stuff." He says, "What in the hell are you doing?" I built a heat shield out of crap that I found on the side of the road. Like, my wife took pictures of me. She says, "Look at this idiot." I said, "Well, we're fixing this truck and we're going to get it down the road." And that was, I think we were going to Greenville, driving that truck to Greenville in 2004. And sure enough, we showed up at Greenville and everybody says, "What the hell is that soda can on the side of the airline?" That's my heat shield. You know, and that was, magazine guys taking pictures of that kind of crap.
Do what you got
to
do.
Do what you do to get going.
My best repair story that I actually helped out on, one of the first or second years, I was at a Colorado Good Guys event and flew out of Denver. And I scheduled one of them like shuttle bus services to get me back to the airport. And it was a sketchy shuttle bus, kind of running late anyway. And a lot of these people were crabby, going to miss their flights. Well, the exhaust falls off the shuttle bus.
Wow.
And he pulls off to the side and he goes, "We got to wait for another bus."
Nope.
Everybody's hollering. There's probably a dozen people in this little shuttle bus. And it's like,
right.
"We're all going to miss our flights. You were late already." I was like, "Can I get out and try to help you?" He's like, "Well, I think that's against our policy." I was like, "Let me see what I can do." It was like a road construction area. And there was like those little metal flags on wire.
Oh, yeah.
I found like five of them, hooked them all together, got underneath, laid on my back, held the exhaust up with my feet, tied it around and basically baling wired the exhaust up so we could get
going.
And everybody, all these people are looking out the window like, "What is this crazy fool doing underneath the shuttle bus?" And I get in and they fire it up and I get a round of applause from everybody. Everybody makes their plane. So that's probably my
best
on the road
story. That is the roadside breakdown stories we love.
Yep.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Crazy build thrash stories to get cars done for a show or to get something finished that broke.
Oh, man.
If you care to say.
We've been taking cars for SEMA for 23 years.
Right.
Of course, we're not taking anything this year because they canceled SEMA. But
yeah.
And we've built cars that I always joke that SEMA is not a driving event.
Right.
It's a static event.
Right.
We've took quite a few pushers. We took a car before. It didn't even have a wiring harness in it.
Right.
Work with a company and they want a new product debuted on a car. And it's like, "Can you get something?" And. You know, we built my wife's Corvair 7 months and debuted it for Royal Purple. But when we did the blue C10 truck, I did the last 5 months. I did 100-hour weeks for 5 months in a row.
Wow.
I was eating junk food and sugar to keep me going. Wasn't trying to lose weight. I lost 23 pounds those last few months without even trying just to get to SEMA.
Wow, that's nuts.
Pushing hard.
That is crazy. And we always... Go ahead.
I don't have a big crew. I have a couple part-time guys, and my wife used to work at the shop.
Yeah.
So I pretty much just work by myself in there.
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's our favorite thing to look at when we go to SEMA is pictures of the Bluetooth drive shaft. Everybody is, it points out, "Oh, look at that truck. It's got a Bluetooth front drive shaft."
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of my favorite things to look at.
I don't miss that anymore.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, upside down wire in a car in the trailer on the way to SEMA. You know, absolutely crazy.
Crazy. So, car guys usually have some sort of automotive-related collections. You got anything, Tim? Hot Wheels, models, anything like that?
Yes to all of the above. I'm still the guy... My wife sent me to the store for milk today. I come home from the shop from a little bit on Sunday, and I actually had to go to the Hot Wheels section, but well, sure. I didn't find anything.
Yeah.
Because I have a huge magazine collection, from car magazines to BMX magazines and automotive books. Heck, I bought 7 books at the swap meet at Louisville this weekend.
I saw pictures of those. Go ahead. I saw you said you had pictures of those up on yeah. Instagram. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah. And then of course I have all my Hot Wheels from when I was a kid. What else? I don't really got a bunch of other weird stuff. I mean, it's like every hot rod shop, you end up with a bunch of parts and yeah. vintage stuff that just looks cool sitting around. And
right.
I realized too last summer that I had way too much of some stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had like 371 and 471 and some 671 supercharger cases. And I think I sold a dozen of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I had a collection of magnesium quick changes and I sold probably 7 of those. Yeah. I'm starting to realize that I'm starting to get older. And I don't really need all this stuff because of my wife's coaching probably. But when you get older and you got to figure out like, well, I really want to build this car and this car. And I've just been gathering parts for, I got a weird kind of concept car, weird Harley Earl, what if car that I've started. And I've got, customs are my heart, but it's hard to get guys that want to do customs and get paid for them anymore. So I'm going to build a 40 Merc for myself. And I've about got all the parts to go with it, a bunch of vintage stuff for it.
Yeah. Cool. Future of our industry. And I like to make sure everybody calls it our industry. Thank you for calling it our industry. I'm just kind of not hip on the word hobby. For you, for me, for a lot of us, we make money doing this. This is the industry. How do you keep it going?
And that's a good, yeah, a lot of people, it is their hobby. But, I mean, put food on my table for 26 years, and my wife works in the industry too, and yeah, that's what my wife actually put a big post on explaining why events are a big deal to get back to on how many people put food in. That's their livelihood, that run events and sell parts and everything. But we've always done a lot of stuff. We didn't have our own kids. So we do a BMX team and we take kids around bike races. We can buy BMX bikes for them. We can kind of be the cool aunt and uncle and don't have to pay for college and braces because they're not our kids.
Right.
And we also try to do that in the hot rod industry. I'm lucky that I do a lot of speaking engagements. I've been to schools and colleges. I've been on advisory board at Wild Tech. My wife's been on the Wild Tech when they had, you know, all different campuses, VC Tech when they had a hot rod program. I kind of go back and help them with their curriculum. We do question and answers with the kids. We try to pass it on as much as we can. You know, a lot of people, you know, we went on the way home from Louisville yesterday, we snuck out about 3:30 and it's only about 3.5 hour drive back to our place from Louisville. And halfway through there is Bowling Green, Kentucky. And there was a streetcar takeover event.
Okay.
And so we stopped there for a little bit because my wife needed to look at the grounds because they run LS Fest and stuff there at Beach Bend and needed to look at some places for their registration. And
right.
So you leave the Street Rod Nationals that it's an older crowd.
Yep.
But it seems like the last few years there's been that next younger crowd they're coming with their kids and the strollers and stuff, so it's like the next generation
sure.
of the hot rodders. But if you really think that it's only an older crowd industry that it's dying, you need to go to LS Fest, or I was really surprised and impressed on this streetcar takeover.
Okay.
Definitely a younger crowd. We pulled in our panel truck. We've been driving for Royal Purple in a 63 panel truck. Mm-hmm. We're driving through the pits, and those kids are looking at it like it's an alien. Like, I don't know if they've never seen anything that old. Of course, you know, it's bright colored and everything. But, you know, there's a lot of Camaros and Mustangs and, you know, later model stuff and tuner cars and stuff. But, you know, it's really – them kids are really into technology. In between rounds, they get out their laptop, they're tuning. So definitely the market, to me, is strong. You go to SEMA, it's a younger crowd too. I mean, if people come in, the older builders, you kind of look, everybody wants to take a car to SEMA. Then when they've done it a couple of times, you realize it is kind of a pain in the butt to haul a car all the way to SEMA, to Las Vegas, and be there for a week, week and a half. And I noticed that 90% of the participants that take cars to SEMA are on the younger side of the builders. LS Fest and that streetcar event, man, there was definitely a young crowd there, drift cars, all that stuff. So they may not all be into 32 Fords and 50 Mercs, but it's still the automotive industry. So, and I know some younger builders that are building pro tour cars every day and high dollar, you know, LS swaps, and you ask them what they want to build, and they want to build street rods. You know, a lot of my younger guys in their 30s, they still love street rods. And, you know, I say street rods aren't dead, and they're going to come back, because a lot of guys that I know, I will help buddies in California, and I've been in New York, and I always look at what the guy that owns the shop, what's his personal car. And 9 times out of 10, the ones I go into, they're still 30s, 40s, and 50s cars are their personal cars that they want to build. So that's still the heartbeat of the industry, even though LS swaps and muscle cars are kind of what's getting all the love in most of the magazines now.
Right. I see that, because on Get Out and Drive, we always talk about the 30-year loop of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that a lot. And I know, Tim, you have to be seeing that a lot. Everybody freaked out whenever Louisville brought their attendance up to, I think it's 25 years previous. Isn't that where they're at now?
30. It's a rolling 30-year break, yeah.
Okay, 30-year break. And that goes right along with our 30-year nostalgia type of thing. Mm-hmm. You're going to start seeing, you know, IROC Camaros and things like that. I never thought I would see a rubber bumpered Camaro or a rubber bumper disco era car being restored and things like that when I was first getting in the industry. And now those are becoming the norm. And we're seeing
body Chevy trucks.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. To me, you know, a square body Chevy truck, I still see there's great interest in them lately. But I still see that in my silly little brain as that's a junk man's truck. I see the sides split open on them, and I see it piled full of wood and old screen doors driving through my neighborhood, because that's the way I see that truck.
Now the 88 to 98 trucks are coming on strong. I have a 92 for my daily driver that I just put a QA1 coilover torque arm suspension kit underneath of it, and I drive it every day. I love it. It's got a little more room than a square body, and I'm going to paint it this winter, and I'm actually going to chop it like an old Boyd Coddington truck when those first came out.
Yeah, I like those. I've been a fan of the CK trucks when they first came out. I drive one daily now. I've got a 94 Suburban.
You call it CK. Everybody else, the industry calls it OBS.
OBS.
I have a hard time saying OBS. It's a CK truck.
It's a CK truck. I'm from the era.
The old body style. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, old body style. That's no. It's ridiculous. That's a CK. I mean, I was there in the beginning, and I remember when 16-inch Boyd Coddington wheels were huge. And you know, that's a CK. And to see a peach and mint green scalloped Boyd Coddington truck in 94, 95, 96, that was amazing. To look at all the bikini girls and everything jumping all over a some Styling Concepts ad, that type of stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what those trucks are burned into my brain as now. And,
that's the nostalgia part that we was talking about.
That is the nostalgia part. Exactly. It's pretty slick. So I know you see it already happening, Tim. So it's great.
Yep. And then Good Guys now, they at most all their events on Friday and Saturdays, they allow also up to 1987 vehicles. So you get the IROCs and stuff like that coming in and autocrossing and everything too.
Okay. Yeah. Do they still have on Sundays? I thought they still had like a, either all Sunday or after a certain time, a come all, any vehicle that wants to come in?
Yep. They call it All American Sunday at all their events, except maybe one in California, the fall, the end of August event. Yeah. On Sundays, late models are coming. Like I announced autocross for Good Guys, and then we actually end the normal classes on Saturday, the end of the day, and then we just do a late model Sunday shootout for the newer cars on Sunday.
Okay.
I like that because it gets everybody involved.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I was out at the Good Guys in Scottsdale out there, and when I don't remember how many years ago it was, but when they first started doing that open gate, nearly open gate thing on Sundays, and I was looking around and I said, holy cow, there is everything here. I mean, absolutely everything.
And then, you know, I like it as, you know, I was a kid growing up with going to rod runs with my dad. And then, you know, I had a different year. My dad was still a Tri-5 guy. And I had the 64 Chevelle. I see that. And I see it a lot. It's like, oh, grandpa's got the 32. Dad's got the 55. Now the kid can come with his Camaro. It's weird when you think about it. I had a buddy that, Chris Ryan, a big custom builder from South Carolina, and he's like, man, I'm looking, you know, he builds amazing customs. He's like, looking for a T-top IROC, original paint. And I'm like, what? And he found one. And then when you think about it, when I was younger and I'm riding my dad's 55 Chevy, mm-hmm. and we're listening to the Beach Boys. So now, if you're driving in your IROC and listening to like the first Poison album, it's kind of the same difference of years. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is. And it's absolutely crazy. I can't believe, again, the 30-year nostalgia loop. And it's crazy.
We've heard that story a lot that, oh, I remember when Dad bought a Z28 back in 84. Right. And yeah, I was riding around with him, and now that kid has grown up, and now sure. he wants to relive those times.
Yeah.
Just like we want to relive our earlier times. Yeah. So, yeah.
In my mind, you know, I'm still 18 or 25 or something, but I was talking to a kid at, I don't know if it was Street Rod Nationals or that takeover event, and I'm sitting there talking to him, and he's talking about this, and you know, you kind of think, you know, is this kid just making stuff up and want to talk? But then he started talking about adjusting points. And I was like, oh, man, you really know what you're talking about. Hell, half these kids out here, they don't know what points are anymore. And, you know, then we got them talking. I'm like, cool, you know, cool guy. And he goes, thank you, sir.
Yep. Oh. Tim Strange is old today. Yeah. Everyone listening, officially, sir. Tim Strange is old. Yep. Yes, sir. Yeah, I've gotten that before. I drive a 72 Maverick, and I actually had a kid that was maybe, I'd say he's maybe between 16 and 19 years old, came up to me at a gas station and said, oh man, asked me if I was the original owner of this car.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no.
I had that with my 65 Chevelle, a kid that I used to work with. I drove it to work one day.
Yeah.
And, yeah, his like, man, that's a really nice car. Did you buy that new?
Uh-oh.
Like, man, how old do you think I am?
Oh, good gravy.
So, Tim, you used to be on had a TV show called Search and Restore. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. TV is kind of a weird life. I never really looked out to be in TV. We built a Buick years ago. For some people from California, started it for some people that kind of sketchy people, and it sat for a while, and then we got to sell it. Some good people picked it up, got us to do a lot more on the car than we ever thought about with the first guy, and took the car to SEMA. I mean, we toured it all over, but we took the car to SEMA, and I'm standing there at the end of the day wiping it off at SEMA, and Kevin Tate from the Trucks TV show come up to me and says, hey man, I've always wanted to meet you, and stood there and talked and exchanged numbers, and he called me and says, hey man, we're doing a volunteer all-star body thrash. We're bringing in six guys and body working a car, a truck, and doing some metal work for a week. You want to come down to Franklin, Tennessee by Nashville and volunteer? And I was like, yeah, sure. That's kind of cool. So, you know, I didn't pay nothing. They didn't give you a hotel. And the wife's just like, yeah, go down. That'd be kind of cool. Just something to say. You was on TV, a TV show. Film for a week and you got on 1.5-hour TV show. So I did that. And I guess I did pretty good because then they were adding on to their show line at the Power Block on Spike TV back then. And the next year, they were getting ready to do a Search and Restore TV show, which I didn't know what it was or what it was about. And they called and says, hey, we're going to fly you down, put you in a hotel this time, and you're going to do a screen test. We've narrowed down people that we've had in here, about a dozen guys. So come down. I was like, okay, I'm out of the shop again for a couple of days. I'm going to go down, just kind of I gave a speech last year at SEMA about working out of your comfort zone, you know, and then magazines quit. Now all this stuff this year. So somebody blames me someplace for saying work out of your comfort zone, because that's all we've done in the last year. But yeah, I did a screen test, and Spike wanted the tattoo guy. And so I went down to Tennessee, and before I went down, they wouldn't tell me what the show was about. And I told them, I was like, well, I'm not going to do something goofy. So you don't tell me what the basis of the show is. And you know, the TV studio didn't understand. They think everybody wants to be on TV. I was like, well, I want to do something that I'm going to be proud of. There's some crappy TV shows out there, and there's some excellent ones. So they finally told me it was like a give back show, kind of like a overhaul and plus almost, because we gave more story and, you know, started some college funds for kids. So I went down there, and, you know, we always came to Nashville for BMX races and stuff. But, you know, if that show would have been in Detroit where it would have been colder, or California or something, I wouldn't have took it. But we really like Nashville. So thought we'd roll the dice and come down here for a while and liked it down here. And while filming, we sold our place in Illinois, found a place down here, found a shop down here. And so I did 32 episodes. We built cars actually in a month. Everybody gives TV people a hard time about, you know, deadlines. It's all TV made up. That's the only reason it's made up, because you can't film a car for a year on a normal network TV show, because people don't want to watch you sand and bondo for 72 hours,
right.
You know,
right.
On the bottom side of the hood, you know, or, you know, the way you build a nice hot rod. And it was a little uphill battle, because most of that TV studio, they had four other shows that were how-to based. So they were so how-to, like if they filmed the side of the car for a sponsor that this is how you put these power windows in, if they got all they needed on the driver's side, that car never got passenger side power windows put in.
Oh.
And they just dismantle that car because it was a TV prop and sell it off in pieces. But the uphill battle was we were building cars for people that had to run and drive and be safe and go back to them right. In a month. The first one was really, really a struggle. And realizing that I had to get parts lined up if they couldn't sell the sponsorship ads, because that's what it was all based off of, was that's how they made their money, is ad placements. That's why you have to sit through a brake pal too, because they're paying the bills. That's what keeps the lights on. That's how all the TV people get paid. So
right.
It was a really good experience. We helped a lot of people. We started some college funds. Some of the volunteers that came on, their shop got busier. They had to add, you know, more work. They had to add, you know, a new building. I wrote a story about the story of that Buick that I was standing beside when I met Kevin and what that all turned into. If we would have finished it for those first people, we never would have finished it to that level. None of this stuff would have happened if I didn't work for a bad client, because then it made me work harder, finish that car better. We got to tour around the country with that car, won awards from Detroit to Pomona to Sacramento and Starbirds. And then that show turned into a TV show because I was standing beside that car when I met Kevin from TV, and then all that stuff that it turned into. I mean, we did a car for a family that lost their mom to cancer, and we started a college fund for the kids and sent them to Disney World.
Sure.
None of that would have been possible if we would have built that car.
Right.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. Absolutely powerful stuff. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. I wrote a whole, like a quick Facebook post when Paul Hansen, the dad, the father that we built that original Buick for, picked it up when it was stalled out. And somebody's seen that, and there's a guy that writes these storybooks on each chapter is a different somebody's story, and he had me add more to the story. So the story of that car and what it turned into in that TV show was actually printed in a automotive storybook.
Great. Cool. That is awesome. Man, that was fun talking with Tim.
Yeah, it was.
He had a lot to say. He's built a lot of cars.
He has, yeah. A lot of history and background on him. It was fun.
Yeah. We'll be talking with him more in part two of our interview with him.
Part duh. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
So,
we'll cover more of his builds and a little more in depth on his cars.
Yeah. Get together with talking with him about some vehicles he's built in more recent past. So, stay with us for part two.
Yeah, it'd be good.
I am John, Custom Car Nerd Meyer. You can follow me at Custom Car Nerd on Instagram.
And I'm Sean, Mr. Sedan Man Cheryl. You can follow me on Instagram at Mr. Sedan Man. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Like, share, give us your comments. Tag us on Twitter at Get Out and Drive Pod.